Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, what's going on, folks? It's the Hammer from the Rugby Rant podcast show, and that gives you an idea just how big we really are. Anyway, I had a strong arm Scott Barrett, if you can believe it, to actually cut in that clip, but I thank him for doing so. Nevertheless, we've got a great show in store for you, and we're happy to have these two gentlemen join the Rugby Rant podcast show. And guys, before I introduce you real quick, you can have a peace of mind to know that being on this show today at this moment, you have eclipsed the number of times the previous commissioner or leader of the league was ever on this show. So you've already had made a huge accomplishment. Let me just tell you that. Nevertheless, folks, thanks for joining us. We have two great guests, as I mentioned. These are the co-presidents of the MLR. We, of course, have Alex Magleby and Graham Bradbury. So, first of all, gentlemen, thank you very much for your willingness to join the Rugby Rant podcast show.
Great to be on, Rob. It's awesome.
Yeah, thanks for inviting us.
My pleasure, gentlemen.
About rugby. I'm glad to
participate. What's that?
Thanks for ranting on about rugby.
Yeah.
Glad to participate.
Well, if you ask my wife, she'll pretty much tell you there's not much else I talk about. So, you know, when we meet new people or even talk to old people, it's pretty much the first thing out of my mouth. So I guess it just comes natural to me. I don't know. But nevertheless, we're going to dig into rugby here today and talk about the MLR and in particular talk with both Graham and Mags just about their roles and this new the new functions that they're going to serve within the MLR, especially going into 2026. So first let's get started here. And I kind of will throw these, you know, a question out to each of you within the context of a larger question. For the first time in 8 seasons, there's going to be a co-president or there's going to kind of be two individuals leading the MLR. Why was the position divided into Alex covering strategy and communications and Graham covering operations and competition?
Graham, go ahead.
Thanks, Max. First of all, thanks for having us on here. We were both part of a process once Nick decided that it was time for new blood to come on board. And as part of that process, the recruitment committee obviously got to know us a lot better. And they felt that we both had sort of differing talents, but both had talents that we could bring to the table. And together, I think we can really drive this forward. So Max can drive the strategy, which I'm sure he'll talk to you a lot about shortly, whilst I can do the nuts and bolts in the background, making sure rugby is played, making sure rugby is entertaining to the American audience. So, I think it's a really good sort of balance between the two of us. And I think that's what the interviewing sort of committee saw as we went through the process. Over to you, Max.
Gotcha. So let's talk about those two roles. So I'm going to go to Alex here. Are you satisfied with the league standards of communication with fans?
Yes. So can I address that in 2 seconds? Just follow on to Graham's point.
Okay, sure.
Point. The office of the commissioner, which Graham and I sit in, basically, and share duties, is wide. And for what we actually need to accomplish in the very short term, and of course the long term, requires two different focuses and two, in most cases, different skill sets. And we haven't always given the office of the commissioner that luxury. And now this is a great opportunity for Graham to really be facing on the ground, getting things done today that need to be done today, which then gives me the opportunity, because that is successfully being done by Graham and company, to look forward and make sure we're doing the right things today to make sure we have long-term sustainable fandom and growth and all of the awesome things that are going to make this league one of the best in the world in the not too distant future.
I love it. I love it. So let's talk about your role as, you know, communications and strategy.
Yeah.
And get to that concept of, you know, are you satisfied with the league's standards of communication thus far?
No, personally, I think across the board, we haven't done a great job sharing the stories of, in some cases, we do an okay job for our players and some of our fandoms, but we really haven't been a great storytelling organization. And there are some very compelling stories that should be told. And we don't necessarily have had the structures in place to make sure that we're communicating those really well. And that's a big work on for me, starting last week with the hire and making sure that we're doing that.
Well, I love that approach. As we know, we've seen with the growth of F1, for example, just the ability to tell a story, and that's really given a lot of attention to F1 racing, and it's really grown in the last probably 5 years because they are able to tell the story. So I can't wait to hear what kind of stories are being told in a positive way.
F1's a great comp. I mean, they, you know, with Drive to Survive and everything else, the amount of money they put into that, you know, various teams have tried the document route, and some very high quality, like the Hounds setup, mm-hmm. was fantastic. I don't know that we've done the distribution correctly for those great content pieces. And we have to be really, really good at telling our stories without spending F1 type of money. But I think the nature of what we are and our stories, they're a bit cheeky and they're fun. And I think they can cut through a lot of the nonsense. And we're really excited to kind of deploy some of those.
What's funny, I had Chance Wagalewski. He and I talked quite a bit. Because he's an LU product, and I knew him when he was at LU. But I always tell him, you know, he should do the illustration, and he should do a cartoon like Chango and Pango, or Chango and Pongo, and just do a cartoon for kids, and they can kind of teach rugby through, you know, cartoons, but kind of go back to that old school, like these two kind of cheeky dude, just getting in a little bit of some dust ups here and there, but at the backdrop, you know, teaching a little bit about rugby and the great cultural aspects of rugby. So
James English, actually, not sorry, who the other James who was Kennedy, who was running New York, was trying to get, I think, Chance to do a graphic novel about all of the players and stuff at once. I think I still have some of those clips.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, folks, you heard it here first. I'm taking full credit for that one. Let's get to Graham. What can we do to enhance the competition and kind of as a secondary part of that, any chance that we could get an America's Cup final with the SLAR champ sometime in the future? You know, the MLR champ and the SLAR champ for the rights to a professionalism in America.
I mean, that's a really interesting question, one that's worth, you know, certainly taking a bit of time to have a look at. But the way we've set our season up this year is really to try and help the Eagles as much as possible. So our championship final is actually going to be a week earlier than it's been in the past, just to give Scott and his team as much chance as possible to prepare for the July internationals. So with that in mind, it's really quite a tight window that we actually have the players with us for. So to try and do something like that in the short term is difficult. But we're open for business, and you know, we're always looking at ideas. I've only been over here a year, but I've been going to so many different sports, and what I love about it is it's pure entertainment. and there's a bit of sport going on somewhere in the middle of the pitch. You know, I've been to high school football games, college football games. I'm going to the Cowboys game on Monday next week. I've been to minor league baseball, MLB. I've been to minor league hockey and NHL as well. So I really, you know, I've tried to absorb as much as I can with what drives the fans to come in and watch a product and what is entertaining. And I think that's going to be a lot of what we put forward next year. Obviously, Mags is driving quite a lot of strategy on that side. But what we also want to do is make sure that when a fan comes in through the door for the very first time, they actually understand what's going on in front of them, because rugby is really quite a complex game. And we need to help that fan understand what's going on to the point where they want to come back. And when they come back two or three times, then we want to sell them a season ticket for the following year. We want to make those heroes, and we want to make that as easy as possible to do. So I think you'll see over the coming couple of months some really interesting announcements that will sort of drive towards that. I'm really looking forward to sharing that in the future with you.
There are two really interesting things that you touched upon, Graham, that I think are vital. And one of them is the fact that I've always felt that leadership in the MLR needs to go out and survey the competition to determine what works for the American, like, dollar. You know, I mean, we're a sports mad country. How do we tap into that? And I've said to people, even with the World Cup, if we tap into 1% of America's population to come to a World Cup game in 2031, we'll eclipse France, we'll eclipse Japan in attendance. You know, and when you think about just the power of, if we could just get 1%, what that would do for American rugby. The second thing that I would think was interesting is you talk about the complexity of the game and the need to be able to distill it down so people want to come back. And this is something my wife says all the time. She's been around rugby for more than 25 years, which said the problem is people don't understand the rules. If we can break down those rules, simplify not the game in itself, but simplify it for the fan so that when they come, they can learn it. Then I think we can really energize and get new fans to come back to the pitch. Let me be more specific. And again, I'll direct this to each one of you, and we'll go to Alex first and then Graham. In each of your roles respectively, what are two major initiatives you'd like to spearhead going into 2026? Well, and this can be a quick.
Sounds like based on that last conversation, we need the Monroe Doctrine Cup with Slar at some point.
I love that. Being a history guy, I love the Monroe Doctrine Cup.
Do the Slar thing in the past, the crossover, and you know, maybe there's an opportunity down the line. But specifically this year is really making sure that we're developing our media and brand portfolio so that the other parts of our KPIs this year, expansion, are going to be easier to happen because we are actually getting out externally all of the good stuff that's really happening. And I think we've been our own worst enemy in that regard and conflicted with ourselves and with rugby and across the country. And I think there's just been a really good job already to date. If you look at the work that Graham and company have done with the schedule, shaping behaviors effectively for those on the East Coast, 4 o'clock on a Saturday, everybody can watch that game. It's exclusive, 4 o'clock on a Sunday, and then 8 p.m. on a Sunday night. That really builds up with a really good show around it. All the storytelling and narratives that we have from season story arcs to weekly will build up to those three matches. So you really want to, the characters' conflict and resolution, the resolution will come through those games, and you can set up watch parties and the behaviors start to really shape, and we're not conflicting and having to choose between five different MLR games at the same time because those are based on stadium availability and things like that in the past. So you're already seeing a lot of these really positive things. Work that's been done behind the scenes start to lay down, and I think we're going to continue to see a lot of those as the season progresses. And our job is to create net new fans that are monetizable in the end, and some of that may come through rugby participants, but most will come through people who just really love great live entertainment and the awesomeness of rugby on TV. And that's our task, my task.
Anything you want to add, Grant?
Yeah, I think one of the things, I know Max touched on the schedule there, I think there's a couple more elements to that. And I think Lucas Reed also did a fantastic job bringing some of these to the table. And that is making sure we're not conflicting with the community game, because you know there has been times where we've been playing games the same time as the community game. And why would you try and, why would you go up against your own probably major supporter base? And so we've made sure that that's not happening this year. I mean, the biggest thing for me is, you know, I've got a great team underneath me with Brandon, Aaron, Stephen, Emma, they're all doing fantastic jobs. And we just need to make sure that we're actually putting out the best product we can do week after week. Every venue looks standardized, and we're just trying to standardize excellence moving forwards. So what we're going to be doing is really enforcing that this is the product going forwards. And when somebody tunes into MLR, they know what to expect. They know the quality that they're going to get. And that's my job this year. So that's certainly something to look forward to. And like I said, we've got some really interesting announcements coming up, which I'm sure you guys are going to be talking about on podcasts in the next couple of weeks. So yeah, I can't wait to get started on that.
Yeah, I love it. So I want to say two things. I love what you guys have done here. I absolutely love what you've done with the scheduling, just, you know, so that we, somebody who wants to see all three games, and certainly kind of the contraction has allowed for that to be more realistic, right? But let's make lemonade out of lemons, as they say, right? Take this and use it as advantage. Carve out these three times. We know when the games are going to be played every single weekend for 10 weeks. And I love the Sunday night rugby concept. Scott and I have been saying it for years. You know, a show to lead into that Sunday night game and an exit show that really, you know, kind of captivate the whole weekend rugby. It's what we've been needing. It's awesome stuff. And I will tell you that it's funny. Some of the folks that I engage with on social media, it's like, well, why Saturday's a rugby day? Why don't we have rugby all Saturday? Well, right, Graham, because everybody that we want to come to the games is playing on a Saturday, right? I mean, that, and it's different from football in that way. 54-year-old guys don't take the pitch to play football, right? But we do have them in rugby. So why combat that? I mean, we know that the NFL doesn't play on Friday or Saturday night for most of the fall. Why? Because it's high school and college football season. They only shift their schedule when those two things are done. So, you know, I think what you guys are doing, you're going to strike gold with this. Thank you so much. I'm glad you guys are forward thinking of this. And that's, I'm done with my rant. Now, there it is.
There it is. We've been waiting for it, Hammer.
Yeah.
Be the rugby so, non-rant show. It's got to have the rant.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. What would we be without a rant on this show? So, look, I've been a little bit vocal on social media. I'm going to be fair and honest here in expressing, I don't want to say criticism, concern about dividing the role. In large part for me, this is because of history. Every league, and we, you know, when I talk to people in the MLR, they always say, hey, look, all leagues go through difficulties. All leagues go through challenges. Look at the NFL, look at the NHL, yada, yada, yada. Every league has had its poignant moments in which a strong commissioner has navigated through a turbulent time. Okay. And I can think of Pete Rozelle and Graham. My apologies. I know you've gone to a lot of games. I don't know if you're familiar with some of these historic individuals in sports, you know, American sports history, but Pete Rozelle with football in the NFL, Bud Selig, Bettman, Stern, all have had their challenges, right? Put me at ease. Why is this co-presidency going to work?
Well, I think hopefully we'll just reiterate it. What we need to have happen for our league to be successful is we have to have a really good product today that has really high, excellent standards in terms of broadcast and competitive parity. That's really important. You know, you can say whatever you want about MLR and the history of MLR. For the vast majority of it, it has had this awesome competitive parity where most games come down to the wire. At the 78th minute, most teams are still in the game. That is awesome. We need to be hyper focused on that and make sure we maintain that. What we also need to have happen right now without a massive league office budget, and that's what everybody has to understand, is this is a very lean team that's been running the league.
Yeah.
So without the bureaucracy of even old NFL when Pete was creating it as a communications guy and what he did in terms of bringing traditional media on board and all the things they hit with the office and what they built out in the NFL bureaucracy, that is not a luxury we have. We are effectively still very much in startup mode, and we need to be growing as rapidly as possible. And the constant debate is, do you grow through revenue, or do you grow through reach? We need both, because reach without the ability to monetize it in the end doesn't mean anything. But revenue to monetize small reach doesn't do anything either. And so there's got to be hyper focus on making sure that we are bringing a lot of new people, net new fans into our sport who are sticky and stay with it. And it's not just simply spending on marketing dollars, but 90% turnover every game. It's actually people who are like, oh, my kids are going to play now, or I'm going to become a season member and I'm going to bring my friends to watch parties. And these micro communities are created of hyper tribalism. And I love it when the Hounds play the Free Jacks because that's such a large rival. And what's going to happen this year? And it's down to the wire, et cetera, et cetera. That has to happen. And that we need hyper focus on that. And so the way wisely we think that our board, who we report to collectively, has structured this is to ensure that effectively those two separate businesses can happen. And then, yes, at some point, maybe we'll have a structure that is more conducive to a CEO or to a commissioner type and a single person. But I don't think that that is a I think where this is based on the skill sets that we have currently in our office is actually quite strong and a much more stronger proposition for what we actually need to have happen today and tomorrow. Make sense?
100%. It particularly makes sense in that if folks, if you think about it, Graham is very much in tune with the day-to-day operations and elements of that nature. And Alex is, you know, has an eye on 2031 and how the MLR can grow with USA Rugby and help promote and evolve in a way that's going to bring a successful event in 2031 and then the rebound effect in 2033 for the women. So when you think about it in those terms, it very much makes sense. And I can appreciate your,
your 70, 80 hours a week into this thing. And if suddenly Graham's having to spend half of that time on fandom and half on running rugby operations or vice versa, then it's not, you don't get the aggregation of it and the exponentialness of it.
Yeah, and I think the other thing to add there is, you know, the players are going to be back in 11 weeks. And to get somebody new completely up to speed in that time for what they would be facing if they were taking on both sides of this would be an astronomical ask. So I think, you know, I'm really comfortable with where we are. I've known Mags for quite a long time, even before I came to MLR. I'm really comfortable in the role.
Awesome. Well, that's good news. I like to hear it. And thank you very much again. You've given me a lot of positive takeaways from that, and I appreciate it. So I got to ask the interesting question. I think it's been asked before, but I'll ask it on this format because so many people have asked it. And that is, will Alex be stepping away completely, or has he stepped away from the Free Jacks?
Yeah, I am no longer involved with the Free Jacks. No longer working for the Free Jacks. Don't get me wrong. I love having been the co-founder, and I love the Free Jacks. I love the fans and the staff that is there and some amazing group of players over the years, but I am no longer involved with the Free Jacks. In order for the Free Jacks or the Hounds or anybody else to be successful, we need a strong league. So I am hyper-focused on helping all our stakeholders have a really strong league along with Graham.
Gotcha. Okay, so we talked a little bit about or touched upon Sunday Night Rugby. I want to get more into that. Obviously, the feature game of the week, they're not all weeks, not all 10 weeks we'll have Sunday Night Rugby. We know that. But, you know, when you break this down, three Chicago matches or home matches for Chicago, which I personally love for obvious reasons based out of Chicago, two matches each for California, Old Glory, and Seattle. So what was the thought or process or operational rationale for kind of these number of matches in these particular locations? And this might be a question more for Graham since it is more operational.
Sure. Again, you know, shout out to Lucas Reed on this one. He brought up Sunday Night Rugby as a concept, and we were looking at trying to create a property, much like other sporting leagues have done. So I think there was a really good idea. All the teams are really bought into it. Some had more stadium availability than others. I think as we progress this and go into the 27 and 28 season, I think we'll end up have teams fighting to actually be hosting these games as opposed to having to position them with teams as they are right now. So yeah, it did come down to stadium availability at the end of the day, who had the Sunday night fixtures. But look, we're really looking forward to hosting at these events. It is going to be a premium production. Like you said, there's going to be shows coming in and exiting the games themselves. And we're really comfortable with the venues that we've got for Sunday Night Rugby. I think it's going to be a heck of a show.
Absolutely. Like I said before, I think it's a great concept. I can't wait to see what the product is going to look like. And, I'll be back with the Hound, so I can't wait to be a part of it, of course. All right. So given what we've talked about, this idea of Sunday Night Rugby, obviously on ESPN2 and ESPN Plus, depending on the week, why is ESPN the right broadcast partner for this league at this moment in time?
I think that's one for you, Max.
Yeah, I think ESPN has an awesome ecosystem for sports, right? And we know that, and we've seen just what's happened with the CFP and everything else. I think there's a great opportunity to grow with a partner like ESPN. I think it's nice to be on the carousel. I think keeping our RSNs was important at the time. It was an important decision. When the ESPN decision was made, that each team was able to keep their regional sports network partnerships, which have been really important for kind of hyper-local connectivity and getting more people to buy tickets and selling of our regional sponsorship. Really, that was an important piece to that, as well as at the time, TRN was an important asset for the league. And I think everybody has to understand just what's happening on a macro level from a media perspective. The old days of traditional media buys aren't what they used to be. There's a lot of disaggregation. And of course, a lot of people who are interested in rugby in terms of kind of the big 5-6 are not necessarily diving in yet until they have a better understanding of what's going to happen with the 31 World Cup. So that's another piece playing into the overall environment right now around rugby. ESPN has been a great partner for year one. We're really looking forward to year two, and that, you know, they've been really supportive of Sunday Night Rugby and to see what we can build from there. At the end of the day, we're accountable to increasing reach, and which will eventually equal revenue. And so we have to make sure that we're figuring out as many possible ways to do that. And that can be through fast channels, that can be through social media, that can be through a whole host of different things. But our core partner, we want to make sure we're taken care of, which is currently ESPN, and we're growing with them. And they've seemed to kind of say, walk before you can run, but you're starting to jog pretty well. So that's a really good sign. And so we hope that relationship gets further in the coming months and see how we do in 26.
I think we also had some pretty good numbers from international broadcasters as well, especially in France, yeah. New Zealand, South Africa. So, yeah, whilst we're focusing on ESPN locally for this podcast, I think we also need to acknowledge that actually we're getting out there much more globally as well.
Yeah, which is important. But so those are the environments that kind of led up to where we were. And then so we're in this two-year deal. This is the second year of a two-year deal. Everybody will work really hard this year so that we have as many options as we possibly can, including continuing on and building in the ecosystem that we're currently with.
Awesome stuff. Well, folks, I know Alex has got to take his leave and attend to some other things. So we appreciate his time. And I'm sure that both he and Graham will be on the show at various times as we move forward in the future. And we're going to continue the conversation with Graham because a lot of the questions they have are more on the operational side. So it'll really be well suited to him. So, Alex, thank you so much for your willingness to join. And good luck in your new role. We can't wait to see what you do.
Appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you at the Chicago game. Thank you.
Yeah, 100%. Come and find me. Or I'll find you. All right. Thanks again for carrying on and soldiering on, Graham. So, this is a question, this next question, I think, is uniquely suited to what your role is in terms of operations. And it's something that I've been talking about in some form or fashion since 2020, since COVID shortened season. The rumor is that that the league has a new operating agreement, and maybe this is because of the change in foreign player status, the change in Canadians, but whatever have you, what are some of the key features or changes that are included in the new operation agreement that you can share with fans?
Okay, so I think there's a couple of different things in play there. The operating agreement deals with how the franchises and the owners work together. So I think that's a little bit different to what we're talking about with regards to the amount of domestic or international players that we're talking about. So if we focus just purely on on how the teams are structured, if you like, with regards to their squads. We had a tough summer. I think that we can have no qualms about that. At one stage, I was looking through the rosters of the teams that had left, and you know, there was 99 US Eagle qualified players who were out of work, unfortunately. So I think we had to react to that. The changes that we made, I think, were good. I think they were. I think it needed to happen. You know, if we look at the amount of overseas players that were in the league last year, I think Canada was the third most players in total. I think New Zealand had probably 50% more players than Canada did. So by limiting overall the amount of overseas players actually in the league, and also Canadians changing their eligibility to being international, I think what we're doing, what the idea was to support the US Eagles to give Scott and his team as many meaningful minutes for his players on the pitch as at all possible. Obviously, there are side effects to that, and we acknowledge that, and it's something that we're going to have to look at as we go through the season. But I think there's enough players of a good enough standard, certainly given that the amount of teams that exited. And I've seen the squads that are going to be put forward for next season, and I'm really excited for the competitiveness of the teams. I think, you know, Anthem looks really strong. All the teams look really strong. So I think when it comes to the competitive parity that Alex was talking about earlier on, I think this could be one of the most interesting leagues that we've ever had. So no, I'm looking forward to it on that side.
Can you share anything about that ownership agreement, you know, the agreement between owners as to, you know, the operation and functions and how things are going to go? Are there any significant changes in how the league is going to operate in that regard?
I mean, that's always an ongoing conversation. And yes, there has been some conversations about that recently, and we are looking at it. I don't think there's anything I can share with you right now, Rob, unfortunately. But when there's a new operating agreement that's actually been drawn up and everyone's accepted it, I think that's maybe something we can talk about then. But as of right now, it's a discussion that is happening, but there's no actual news I can share.
Okay, no worries. I appreciate your honesty. And yeah, you guys know you have an open door policy in the Rugby Rant. You know, and if and when that gets solidified, we'd love to talk about it, because that digs deep into what we love to talk about, discuss, and allow for some opportunities for transparency, so fans are clued in as to, you know, the foundations of the league and how things are going to function and operate. Perhaps it's the wrong time to talk about it, although Alex mentioned it before, and that is the expansion, the E word. And, you know, we've seen contraction, obviously, but there's been discussions from a few sources just about the eye on the future. We don't know when it'll come or if it'll come, but we have to be open to the option, right? So in my mind, it's better to prepare for the future before it becomes a necessity. So my question, and I have two of them here, will there be a clear and rigorous blueprint for teams that they're going to have to follow in the future in order to become a part of this league? And I'll address the second question after that one.
Okay, understood. Now, look, and as Max put it, it is really key that we bring on new franchises, and that's active conversations that are happening daily. I've been talking to quite a few people recently and have more conversations even tomorrow. So, you know, it's a really exciting time. There's been a lot of outreach. A lot of people have been talking about MLR recently. So, you know, we will get there. And I'm really looking forward to sort of introducing those new teams as and when they become available. So, one of the things that we have talked about, you know, obviously I've been in the league office for just over 12 months now. When we look at a new team that comes on board, they normally struggle straight away. And that doesn't help with the ownership group themselves, because obviously they get deflated. They think they're going to come in and win immediately. And that doesn't necessarily happen straight away. So I think what we have to do on that side is be more supportive. We shouldn't just have a team come on board and just, there you go, you know, here's our league, come and play. I think we have to put things in place in the background to help support and make sure that team is competitive from season one, and so that the fans can join and can see victories and can see that there is a route forward from the very first season. So that's something we've been working on, what that package looks like when somebody comes on board, what are they actually getting into with the league, and making sure there's sort of standards there and people who have operated in the league already that can help and support to make sure those teams hit the ground running. So that's certainly something that we want to, you know, progress moving forward, making sure those teams are not just left out there, but actually supported and, yeah, made to win.
Let me ask you in a more granular fashion, is an exhibition season, has that been part of those conversations about what that might look like?
No, I've not heard that at all. Okay.
The only reason I ask is obviously Mags and the Free Jacks came through. They did an exhibition season, and obviously they've had a very successful launch with, you know, with the three-peat. So I just out of curiosity, I was wondering about that. But nevertheless, the second question is, will teams that have pulled out of the competition in 2026 be provided with a clear pathway to return if they're interested?
No, we keep open lines of communication with those teams. You know, we're talking to those owners fairly regularly, certainly the ones that want to keep engaged. So if there is somebody who wants to come back, I'm sure that's a door that's open and a conversation that can be had. How that actually looks realistically, you know, we don't have that right now. I think it's, like we said, it's been a fairly tough summer. And you've got to let the dust settle a little bit before we can start those conversations again. But, you know, there's some really, there's some really good people in those ownership groups. And I think I've been reflecting on this, that, you know, we have some really, really strong owners. People have put in tens of millions of dollars into the US rugby ecosystem. And I don't know if they necessarily get the credit that's due to them. You know, they're doing this for the love of the game. And whilst we might not agree with everything that they want to do with their team, or, you know, it's their team. And it's their money, and they're trying to grow rugby as the best way they see fit. So I think we should be trying to be as supportive as we can be to our owners. And certainly we want to bring on more owners as well.
Yeah. Alex talked a little bit about this, and I'm curious as to your take. Obviously, you guys have kind of, I don't want to say danced around, but hinted around at the idea that there's become more alignment. I mean, I think you said it yourself that, you know, U.S. Eagles and providing meaningful minutes. So that's clearly an undercurrent of the approach that the league and you guys as co-presidents are taking. From where we're at standing now, does there need to be more alignment between the MLR and the USAR in the run-up to 2031? Are you guys pretty comfortable with where things are aligned thus far?
Alignment's an interesting word. I think communication. I think the more communication we can have, the better. I regularly speak with Tamara and the guys at Anthem as well. You know, part of my new role is to sort of manage the relationships with the USA Rugby and also World Rugby as well, which, you know, I've known those guys for a little while now. And, you know, it's a really good relationship. And Nick Benson's done a fantastic job of it fostering and sort of bringing that relationship to a point where Anthem was even a thing in the first place. So, you know, kudos to him. My role is to keep that communication up and make sure that everyone's aligned with what we're doing. I think everyone's comfortable right now in USA Rugby and World Rugby with where MLR is. Obviously, we want to keep growing and we want to be in a position that we're the premium, that we are putting a premium product for 2031 and making sure that the fandom that Mag spoke about so passionately is there and ready for the such a big tournament to be happening in this country. Absolutely. I don't know if alignment's the right word, but certainly the levels of communication between MLR and USA Rugby and World Rugby will continue to get better.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate that insight. It certainly kind of frames the approach as we move closer to 2031, both for the league and USAR. So again, I think that's a good point of, I don't want to say contrast, a good point of difference between what it means to be aligned and what it means to effectively communicate. So thank you, Graham. I appreciate your candor there. Internationally speaking, USAR and Rugby Canada's fortunes seem to be intertwined. I mean, I think I expect fully that in 2031, there's going to be some matches played in Canada, especially with the success of the women's team. We can expect matches to be played in 2033 to our north. How do you respond as co-president? How do you respond to criticism from our friends to the north, fans to the north, regarding their boys being declared foreign players?
It's an interesting question. It's been a while since we've had a team in Canada. It didn't make a huge amount of sense for them still to be classified as domestic. But, you know, the Canadian players have been a fantastic element of MLR over the last couple of seasons. But then, like I said, we have 50% more Kiwis than we do Canadian players. We have the same amount of South Africans and Australians as we do as Canadian players. So did it make sense to actually have them stand out and be classified as domestic ongoing two or three seasons after the last Canadian team was actually in the league? I would say not, if I'm being honest. And it did sort of stick out a little bit to me as a strange sort of a hangover, I guess, from the Toronto Arrows time. So, you know, with having a reduced amount of teams and a lot less space for American Eagles in the first place, it just seemed like something that we had to do. Or else we could have been in a position where we had a lot more overseas players and players who were being classified as domestic but weren't actually USA Eagle eligible, actually playing than USA Eagle people. So it just seemed the right time to make the change. Obviously, we'll keep an eye on it and see how it is, but I think the quality of rugby won't suffer, but we will keep an eye on that.
Yeah, and, you know, for folks that haven't been following the league totally, one thing I will suggest to everybody is remember that when Bill Webb owned the Toronto Arrows, he wanted Canadians to be declared foreign, you know, for his own reasons, right? But they saw it as an advantage. And, you know, I'd suggest maybe we'll see World Rugby invest in a Canadian equivalent to the anthem, you know, potentially down the road, you know, in anticipation of the World Cups in 2031 and 23. So who knows? You know, good players will find their way as onto roster, no doubt. Two more questions for you, Graham. And again, I appreciate your candor and honesty and approach to these questions. This one's going to cut a little closer here. So, you know, quite frankly, will players have an opportunity to ratify CBA in the future?
I mean, I don't want to get into the details of CBA, but it's a conversation that's ongoing. We're having regular dialogue and regular meetings, both on video and in person next week as well. So, you know, we will keep working towards having a CBA in place. That's something that, you know, we recognized the USRPA and MLRPA a couple of years ago. And these conversations have been ongoing since, probably the summer, or certainly the autumn anyway. I can't recall, I do apologize. But yeah, you know, we are talking, there's open lines of communication, and yeah, we're moving forwards. I think everyone's aligned with what we want to do, which is have sustainable business for both the players and for the league as well, and we all grow together. Obviously, we may have different views on how that looks, but that's what we're working through.
Perfect. Perfect. Love to hear that continued conversations and communications are ongoing. That helps both sides, right? Yeah. All right, last question for you. And this is kind of a big picture. We're going to pull back, think about the whole conversation. What does the league have to get right in 2026 to carry on into 2027?
You make it sound like there's one thing. I think there's so many things.
Well, and there might be don't hesitate, throw some out. I'm happy to hear. I'm sure fans are happy to hear what we need to get right. I mean, aside from buy tickets, buy merch, support corporate partnerships, and click anything from a team or from the league that is a thumbs up, a like, a follow, all that stuff. So let's set aside what we know fans need and have to do and talk about what the league needs to get right.
No, absolutely. So, I mean, from my mind, it has to be more entertaining. We have to reach out to those people that are coming in the stadium for the first time or flicking on the carousel on ESPN and come across us. We have to be easier to understand. And there's going to be a few different ways that we can do that. And, you know, like I said earlier, I wish I could talk about it. I can't, but it's nice to be able to talk about it in the next, you know, coming months. I think if we can get our product right, if we can standardize how good we look for both in the stadium and also on the television screen, I think that'll be a major step forward, because I don't think that's necessarily been in place in the past. So, I mean, they're the main things, but we need to really focus on our product, make it as entertaining as possible, but also really standardize that product to make sure that when you go to Chicago, it's the same as when you go to Seattle, when you go to the Free Jacks, so you can have that same expectation of how that looks. So yeah, that's a real key focus for us. But also, you know, I'm just just tapping on other things from the league office standpoint, I really want to focus on our officials getting better, because not only should the players have the chance to be in 2031, but we should have officials that are really at the top level by 2031. I'm really focused on supporting David Wilkinson and his group of young officials that are coming through, and making sure that they get the best options and, you know, the best opportunities that they can. So, looking forward to seeing how that goes as well. There's a few different things that we need to get right. We've been planning this since before the end of championship. Some of the things that have already been discussed with regards to schedule, etc., because we could see there was a problem. You know, Lucas Reed and I were pretty new to the business. We had to sort of run with it in last year. If you remember, we had quite a short off season in comparison to what we'd had previously, because we had the championship final after the international mm-hmm. window the season before. So it was a relatively sort of tight time frame that we had to do anything with. We've had a bit more time this term, and I think you will see some substantial differences. And hopefully we will continue to take the rugby purists along with us on the journey, but also pick up a lot of new people along the way as well.
I love it. Great to hear. So three things to recap, folks, that I picked up: standardize how we look, give a great experience across the board for both people coming into the stadium as well as people watching, and then, you know, improve, make sure to continue to grow and improve the referee standard throughout the league. So I love it. Great stuff to see. Well, I very much, Graham, and of course, Alex had to leave, but I very much appreciate both of you joining the Rugby Rant podcast show. It's added so much value to what we do, added value to fans and what they can expect in 2026. And again, you guys have a open door policy here in the Rugby Rant to come out and join and talk about anything that relates to your role as co-presidents in the MLR. So thank you very much for joining the show. I really appreciate it, Graham.
Oh, absolute pleasure, Rob. Looking forward to joining you again. So see you soon.
Yeah. And, once again, we're looking to bring, new stuff to you guys, some anything you can pick up and learn about the MLR, about rugby happening in the United States. And we do it all for you, the fans, so we can grow the game of rugby one fan at a time. And so I'd urge you guys to continue watching. In January, Scott and I are going to be bringing you some special interviews. They're going to be with the GMs across the league. And in doing so, we're just going to be talking about how they had to adjust and adapt how they do and what they do as the league just goes through its changes and goes through the process of putting a great product on the field and on TV screens as we approach 2026. So once again, I'd urge everybody to come back and join us each week. I believe we're going to start off with Alan Clark from the Seattle Seawolves in week one in January. So come back and join us. With that, folks, this is one another episode of the Rugby Rant podcast show, and we will see everybody at the next.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.